This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
As we deal with the challenges of hybrid working and talent wars in this new world of work, the Financial Times helps you understand what might be next. I'm Isabel Berwick, the host of the FT's Working It podcast. Each week, we discuss the ideas and trends shaping the future of work. The FT's broad coverage and unique insights can help you to make sense of it all. Check out our podcasts and read selected articles free at ft.com/insights.
So here we go with another one of our Q&As this time with John Boyne, who's done it before, but we've forgotten what he said last time, so he can come up with exactly the same answers. John's book is The Echo Chamber. If you want to hear John talking about that extraordinary new novel that he's done, then you can find that podcast where you got this podcast. Okay, here we go. Are you ready for this, John? Are you ready to...
I am indeed.
...inspire us with more fantastic book recommendations and insights. Question number one, what was the last book? This definitely was the same opening question, I think, as last time. What was the last book you really, really enjoyed?
It's a book called True Crime Story by Joseph Knox, which came out about a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. And I adored it. It is, as the title suggests, True Crime Story. It's written as a true crime story, but Joseph, the author, is a character in the book. A woman goes missing and he's interviewing all these different people who knew her at the time, family, friends, but he's also sort of part of the action. And you're reading and thinking, is this fiction or is this nonfiction? And it sort of bends genre quite a bit. And I thought it was very highly original and very readable.
Also, he doesn't come out of it because he's in it, but he doesn't come out of it very well himself, does he?
And in fact, he starts the book by saying that he's been dropped by his publisher, which he hasn't been. So he says that the book itself has, and his actions that are recounted in it, lead to the publisher dropping him. But it's recently been number one, so I don't think the publisher are dropping him anytime soon.
I get the feeling that's one of the first answers where all three of us have loved that book. It's a great book. It's sitting next to me now as we're talking. Is there a book, John, that stands out to you from your childhood?
Yes. The one for me from childhood is probably The Silver Sword by Ian Serraglio. And I always look back at that as sort of the first time I read about children in the war, in the Second World War. And the part children played in it and the effect war and trauma had on kids. And it's something I've written about in three of my young people's books. And I remember finding it a very frightening book as a sort of 10-year-old reading it and seeing these four children fleeing the Nazis. But it really, really stayed with me for many years and probably, you know, sparked that interest in the war that led eventually in my life to Boy in the Striped Pyjamas.
Short chapters versus long chapters discuss.
I think short chapters these days, you know, I'm writing a book at the moment where every chapter is only about 1,500 words. So it's quite snappy. And I think that works quite well. And in the Echo Chamber, I do it as well. I sort of narrow it down, like just very, very short scenes with titles. I think it makes it a little bit easier on the reader and on the writer. I'm also sort of... short books, even though I write long books, there's nothing better. I'm sure you get them yourself, you know, when you like book post arrives and sometimes it's like 120 pages and you go, oh yeah, okay, I'll have a go with that one. There's too many long books in the world.
Yeah, quite right. So Ian Rankin is quoted on the front cover of The Echo Chamber saying, this is the funniest book I've read in ages, savage but compelling. And you've obviously had great quotes from many writers about your books. Is the one that's meant the most to you?
I think probably John Irving, who gave a quote for The Absolutist, I think it was. And John Irving is my favourite writer. And growing up, I just absolutely idolized him. And then when I became a published writer, We became friends and he became sort of a mentor to me over many years as well. And the idea of him even reading one of my books, let alone, you know, saying something nice about it, was wonderful. So yeah, seeing John Irving's name on a book of mine, it was a big thrill.
When and where, John, are you most comfortable writing? So we're talking here, you know, location, obviously, which I suspect might be in the room that you're in at the moment. Do you write a particular time of day? Do you like to have music on, etc.?
When I'm writing a first draft of a novel, I like to be here in Dublin. We can see each other on the screen here and in this room that you're looking at. I like to have sort of a few months where I can just be here every day. Once I have that first draft, doesn't matter. I can go anywhere with it. And, you know, in the pre-COVID days when I'd be traveling a lot, I can bring that. I could work on a plane, on a train, in a pub, in a hotel bedroom. And I'm happy to do that. And I quite like bringing work with me when I'm away to kind of keep me focused on something. And I'm generally at my desk by about 8:30 in the morning. I see it very much like a day job. I don't tend to work late at night. So it's usually just during the day. And I couldn't possibly listen to music. I couldn't have any distractions. I know Roddy Doyle, the first thing he does when he sits down at his desk in the morning is he puts music on. I couldn't possibly do that. But every writer works differently.
Just before Matt has the next question, apologies, Matt. Do you, in your book that we were discussing on the other podcast, your new book, The Echo Chamber, George, the father, has a news routine. It's relevant to what you've just said. Has a routine in the morning when he wakes up. Before he puts the phone on, he checks. I'm just trying to remember the order of it, but he checks Reuters and Associated Press. Then he'll look at the BBC, then the Times, Telegraph. Anyway, there's a series of very astute and very amusing gags about what he thinks of the people who consume media from those particular sources. And I'm thinking, if you start work at 8:30, John, have you done your equivalent of George's kind of media circle before you sit down?
I do, yeah, like around 7:30, I'd start on like checking the emails. And then, yeah, I go through like a whole bunch of news sites, a couple of like showbiz sites, you know, I'm only human. Then a couple of book sites. And and I kind of get my fill of like gossip and things and see if anything interesting happened overnight. And yeah, I do have a kind of a, I've been doing it for years, I guess, you know, like to say, I would look at the various newspapers I would look at, I'd probably look at in the same order every day. It's just a simple routine at the start of a day.
Is there a book, John, that you had to persevere with? I am pretty brutal when it comes to books. I tell people that it's within 50 pages, but bluntly, it's within 10. And sometimes it's even less than that. If you've not got, and I am pretty relaxed about that as well. I entirely blame it on the author. If you've not grabbed me within 10 pages, then that's your fault, not mine. But is there a book that you did persevere with that you weren't quite enjoying to begin with, but you're glad you did?
Yeah, I don't feel any guilt about putting a book down if I'm not enjoying it. I feel like life is too short. But one thing about a book that I did persevere with was I recently got, I don't know if you know the Folio Society. They produce these lovely illustrated hardback editions of novels. And I was given a copy of Oscar and Lucinda by Peter Carey. And I remember reading Oscar and Lucinda when I was about 18, when it came out, and I couldn't make head or tail of it. It just, you know, I was too young. It didn't make any sense to me at all. But I got this beautiful edition, and, you know, I wanted to read it again because it was so beautifully packaged, but I thought this is going to be a bit of a slog. But coming to it 30 years later, you know, I read it in about 3 days. I couldn't put it down, and something that I thought was going to be difficult to read was actually compelling.
The next question is about world creation, I think, really. And there are some authors who are spectacularly brilliant at it. But is there a book, John, that you would like to step inside of? Maybe just for a day, maybe for a couple of hours, and then bail out?
I think it's probably an obvious answer in some ways, but I think maybe the Narnia books, because, you know, that series was very important to me as a child. And the thing is, I'm not really a fantasy guy at all. I don't read very many fantasy books, but I love those books, and I love my memory of where I was when I was reading them and who I was when I was reading them and the effect that they had on me at the time. So, yeah, if I could open, you know, if I could go through the cupboard and come out the other side, that would be, I've come out of one closet in my life. Why not come out of another?
Come out of the wardrobe. Yeah, there you go. And another.
That would be nice.
There's no doubt that by writing great books as you have, John, and let's be blunt about it, writing very popular books as you have, there will have been doors open to you that would have been closed otherwise. Is there anyone that you've met because of your writing that you wouldn't have met otherwise?
Well, I've been to Áras an Uachtaráin, which is the president's home here in Dublin, and met the president of Ireland, and that was nice. But one I particularly remember was, it was a good few years ago now, I think I was in Australia, and it was when Boy in the Striped Pyjamas had come out, and I was touring that book, and my publisher in Australia had asked me, was there anything in particular that I would really like to do while I was there? And of course, I'd grown up watching Neighbours and loving Neighbours. And I said jokingly when I was in Melbourne, I said, you know, well, I'd love to go to, you know, I don't want to do the tour. I want to, like, that to be, you know, fancy. I said, I'd like to go, you know, meet them all and, like, you know, see it being filmed and all that kind of thing. And I had a day off and I was picked up by a car and off I was brought to the Neighbours set. And Jackie Woodburn, who plays Susan Kennedy in the show, was my host for the day.
Wow.
And she took myself and Philip Arda, a wonderful children's writer, around the set and introduced us to everybody. And then she invited us to her home for dinner. And then on another occasion when I was in Australia, she took me out with Harold Bishop, whose real name I can't remember, but I'm sure he has one.
I don't know who you are.
Sitting at a sushi restaurant in Melbourne with you know, Harold Bishop and Susan Kennedy. You're sort of thinking, how did I get here? What was the moment where my life led me to this place? And it's very exciting. You know, I enjoyed that more than I enjoyed meeting some writers.
What was the name of the president's house, John?
Áras an Uachtaráin, which is the Irish. Áras is house, and Uachtaráin is president. So the house of the president.
Right. I thought, because the last podcast that we did, I thought we were going to have another head of state story, because the last one of these we did was with the Icelandic writer Ragnar Jonasson, who is speaking to us from Reykjavik. His book is The Girl Who Died. You can get that podcast where you got this podcast. Anyway, it turns out that the Prime Minister of Iceland, who I'm sure you know is Katrin Jakobsdottir, turns out to be an expert in crime fiction and wrote her thesis about Icelandic crime fiction. And so Ragnar and Katrin sort of get together and they're on a writing project. So I thought for one moment we were going to have... You were going to tell us that the Irish president is a mate of yours, and you're...
Well, not quite a mate, but he is a poet, Michael D. Higgins. You know, wow. I mean, he's, you know, a lifelong politician, but he's also a very well-respected poet, a very cultured individual. And, you know, everybody likes him in Ireland. He's a very nice gentleman.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that counts as a head of state story. So
yeah, it does.
I don't know who we're going to have on our next podcast, but we're on a hat trick. So John Boyne has one, Ragnar has one, and that's a fascinating story. Anyway, John, listen, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Do you give yourself do you have some time off and have a summer holiday?
I mean, it's only been holiday recently, hasn't it? You know, I mean, it's not like there's been much to do, but the rest of the summer, like, as I said, like, I'm doing a festival in Tring, which is a place I'd never heard of. It's just outside London. You've probably heard of it.
Yes.
Some point in August. And I am so looking forward to that. To just kind of being in a room with readers, booksellers, reading from the book, talking about books. I'd rather that than a holiday.
Okay. Well, that's a classic John Boyne answer, I think. So if look out in Tring, because John Boyne is coming your way and he'll be the one with the biggest smile in the room. John, a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much.
And you, as always.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Christopher Kimball, host of Milk Street Radio. If you'd like to change the way you cook and also think about food, please check out the Milk Street podcast. We travel around the world to find pizza in Tokyo, Egyptian food in Berlin, and Bhutanese farmers in Vermont. We speak to Jamie Oliver, Rachel Ray, Al Roker, Ina Garten, as well as Michael Twitty, Marcus Samuelson, and Alice Waters. And we'll introduce you to recipes that will change the way you cook, from bright pink Tottenham cake to Afghan dumplings to shoyu sugar steak, and that one is direct from Hawaii. It's a whole new world of food right here on Milk Street Radio. Please check us out on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts, or go to 177 Milk Street acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.